Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Thank you for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you live from the back of Roberta's Pizza on a lovely day in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host today, Erin Fairbanks. This is a special studio recording, and we are in studio with Melissa Kogut, the Executive Director of Chefs Collaborative. Welcome to the studio.
It's good to be here.
So we brought you in today to talk about the new Chefs Collaborative cookbook, but I thought before we jump into some of the delicious recipes, we would get a little bit of a background on the organization and maybe a little bit more info on you. But let's start with Chefs Collaborative. What is Chefs Collaborative?
Well, Chefs Collaborative is a national chef network with a mission to make sustainable practices in restaurant and food service kitchens second nature. So big vision.
Big vision. And it's about 20 years old. Is that right?
We're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, which is incredible.
Congratulations. So give us a little bit of a sense, you know, 20 years ago, I think folks today in food, we like to think that we invented everything in the last 5 years. Obviously not the case. You guys have been working and advocating for a lot of today's kind of most pressing issues for a couple of decades now. How did the organization start and what was kind of some of the genesis that prompted it?
Well, a bunch of well-known chefs were participating in an organization called Old Ways that was promoting food ways, and they were meeting in Hawaii and were lamenting the fact that so many consumers knew nothing about sustainable practices or the environment with regard to food production, and made a decision to form an organization called Chefs Collaborative, where chefs would educate one another. They would tell their customers about their food purchasing decisions, and chefs were just starting to become influential. So there was a vision to really leverage that influence.
And you guys are a membership-based organization, or?
We are. We have members all over the country, mostly chefs and food professionals, but also producers and fishers and food writers and food activists.
And I know membership has more than doubled since you came on board as executive director, so congratulations.
Thank you.
How does one become a member, and what does membership entail?
Well, you can go on to our website, chefscollaborative.org, and become a member there. The basic membership is now $50, and you can join as an individual or a restaurant or a business. And as a member, you get a discount to our events. You receive all of our materials. We produce educational materials with the chef in mind, so sort of interpreting the environmental information into daily practices for chefs. And we have local networks that are forming all over the country, so an opportunity to participate there for peer-to-peer support and sharing best practices.
Cool. Maybe you can tell us about some of the educational materials. I mean, I know personally I was really impressed with the work you guys have been doing around salmon. Mm-hmm. And the fight to kind of keep the keep Bristol Bay preserved. And so can you talk about like that topic a little bit, and maybe some of the other kind of big projects that you guys have been working on over the last year or so?
Sure. We have been doing a lot of education around Bristol Bay sockeye salmon, which is under threat. This is Alaskan salmon, under threat by the possibility of a large mine being developed in the habitat area, and it would decimate the salmon there. Chefs know firsthand what it means to lose a precious resource like that and enjoy cooking with it. We could lose it forever. We know here on the East Coast we've lost all of our wild salmon. We don't want to do that on the West Coast. So we have no problem getting chefs involved to host educational dinners in their restaurants. It's something they get viscerally. So that's been a great program for us. Seafood Solutions is the name of our sustainable seafood educational program, and we actually have online a free tutorial for chefs, but I'm not a chef and I use it, and I've learned so much by it, to explain how to make sustainable choices, how to educate your customers, because sometimes they're not used to certain types of species. So that's another program, another seafood program that we're working on.
Nice.
And we just had a trash fish dinner in Boston that we're taking on the road.
Trash fish?
Yes.
What's trash fish?
Well, it was eye-catching for sure. The media really paid attention, that's what we wanted to happen. Trash fish refers to species of seafood that for whatever reason are underutilized. Underutilized is a term that a lot of the environmental organizations don't actually like because, although all the environmental groups we work with were in support of the event, they don't like the term because it implies, we can't eat cod anymore, so let's turn our attention to this seafood, and then we risk the possibility of making that species be decimated as well, like what happened to monkfish. What we wanted to do with the dinner was to educate people about there are opportunities to eat alternative species. We don't have to eat salmon and shrimp and all the fish that are, there's a lot of pressure on those populations. So there's alternatives to consider, but we need to be sure we have data for those species so that we don't risk
kind of making the same mistake over and over again, where all of a sudden we're like, monkfish is so hot, we're all going to eat it all the time. And then you end up kind of just perpetuating the same cycle of, you know, overfishing or overconsumption. And trash fish is such a funny name, you know, brings to mind a very, you know, kind of strange visual. But is, I think, one of those things that, like, throughout history, I'm thinking back to the 1800s when it was like nobody ate lobster because it was like so weird, and like servants' contracts would say we will not eat lobster more than 4 times a day. So really looking at the kind of marketing and you know, renaming of some of these species. But I think you bring up a really interesting point with keeping in mind what is a sustainable way to be a consumer more generally. Now, you're not a chef, but you run a chef-based organization. How did that happen? How did you come to Chefs Collaborative?
Well, I have to say, it's a dream job that I never envisioned. I never knew there was a job like this. You know, like many of us, I love to cook. I've always paid attention to fresh ingredients, quality ingredients, have a good sense of taste. So, I mean, I can pick out a lot of flavors. So it just has always been a focus of mine. But for years, I've been a political activist and ran a women's health organization in Massachusetts. So my background is in nonprofit management, community organizing, and I did that for a long time and was looking for a change. And about the time I was looking for a change, I read Omnivore's Dilemma, and like, again, so many of us was transformed by that book and thought, this makes me mad. I could do something about this. So I began to look for jobs in the field. And there weren't many at that time. I mean, you made the point about everything started 5 years ago. I think so much started 5 years ago. I mean, that's when I started at Chefs Collaborative, too. Many of the organizations have been toiling away for 20 years, but it's really in the last 5 years that we've seen such a transformation in our food system. And maybe not so much in the food system, but at least awareness among the public. So when I learned about Chefs Collaborative, it was a job basically organizing chefs around this issue that I cared a lot about. So that it was a dream job, and it still is. It's great.
That's awesome. So I'm curious, you know, having worked in kitchens myself, so I know that chefs have strong personalities, and those personalities can really differ from chef to chef. And can you talk a little bit about, you know, how it is working primarily with chefs? Are there things that are really great about that? And I'm sure there are things that are more challenging, maybe in contrast to some of your prior work.
You know, there's a lot of similarity to my prior work in terms of I get to work with passionate, smart, committed people. I mean, chefs are people that work really hard. They tend to work long hours. It tends to be a very community-minded group. They're the first to be donating their time and food and resources to local community events, you know, all those food events, that's they give a lot of themselves. So the people on my board are those people. They're smart and they're passionate, and it's fun to work with them. It's lots of big opinions sometimes, makes decision-making hard. But people are pulling in the same direction, so it's good. The chair of the board of my organization, I feel so lucky to work with. It's Michael Levitin from Lumiere and Area 4 in the Boston area. And he's just a very smart, strategic guy, and passionate about what he does. It's been a lot of fun to work with him and kind of corralling our group to have a big impact.
Nice. And so you are kind of beating the path around the city, and I'm sure around the country, talking about the new Chefs Collaborative cookbook. Now, first cookbook in 20 years. What took so long?
That's a very good question. It's something the organization talked about on and off, and this just sort of fell in our lap. I mean, it didn't really fall in our lap. We had an opportunity to put a proposal together with some writers who are interested in working with us on the book. And we lucked out in getting the interest of Taunton Press, who's been a great publisher to work with. Carolyn Mandarano is our editor, managing editor, and Ellen Jackson is our writer. And the team that came together working with a group of our chef board members, just, it was an incredible project.
Hi. So we're going to take just a short break, and when we come back, I want to hear a little bit about more what can folks expect to find when they pick up the book. So hang tight. You've been listening to the Heritage Radio Network. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Today's theme song was Third Degree Rug Burns by Tackstar, and what you're listening to now is Cheese Gainsburg by Tackstar. You're locked on to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Oh, no, this is us, man. We are back. We are in the studio with Melissa Koga, the executive director of Chefs Collaborative, and we are just about to tuck into their very first cookbook, the Chefs Collaborative Cookbook. So, tagline, local, sustainable, delicious recipes from America's great chefs. What, you know, do you feel like really sets this cookbook apart from other cookbooks on the market that are making some similar kind of claims with regards to featuring local sustainable recipes and sourcing and I don't know, approach, I guess.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of great cookbooks out there that center around local sourcing or seasonal recipes, and I have a lot of them, and I actually have a lot of cookbooks that I read religiously. But sets this one apart is that it's chock full of information, sidebar information about all kinds of tips from chefs about how to make sustainable purchasing decisions, how to read labels. One of my favorite sidebars is, how much freezer space do I need if I buy a quarter of a cow? Things that you might not think about when you want to take steps as a home cook to purchase more sustainably or locally.
It gives you a chance to kind of think a little bit more holistically about what that would mean. Now, I have to say, I'm a little curious about, you guys have Willie Nelson on the back cover of the book. Tell me about that quote and kind of how Willie got involved in repping the book.
Well, Farm Aid is an organization that we work with a lot. They do amazing work promoting, keeping farmers on the land, which is central to the work we do. And they're actually based in Boston, where our office is based. So we know all the staff there. And we talked to them about showing Willie the book and asked if he'd be interested in looking at it and commenting on it. And we thought it was a long shot, but he did, and he had a great quote on there, so we're really happy to have him on board.
Nice. I'm a huge Willie Nelson fan, so
me too.
That definitely jumped out at me. I'm like, oh, if Willie Nelson says it's a good book, then that's all the reason I need. So putting together the book, I mean, obviously you have thousands of members. There's not thousands of recipes in the book. How did you kind of break it down to decide, you know, what to include and what categories? I mean, did you just kind of do an open call to your members, or what was the kind of plan jumping in?
We did do an open call to our members. We announced that we were working with Taunton Press on the Chef's Collaborative Cookbook, and we wanted all of our members to have an opportunity to submit a recipe for consideration, and we couldn't use all of them. Ellen Jackson, who was our writer, the writer we worked with, is an accomplished chef herself. She now is a writer, and we talked about how the book was going to be organized, and it's organized, there's four chapters. I'm going to paraphrase the chapters, but basically plants, meat and poultry, fish and vegetables. Actually, I already said vegetables. Dairy. Is that five? I may have lost count.
Well, I think it looks like, yeah. Vegetables, fruits, and other edible plants, meat and poultry, fish and seafood, dairy and egg.
There we go.
Nice.
So we knew how we were dividing up the book, and we wanted a range of recipes from different seasons, different parts of the country, and she did a really excellent job in balancing the choices that we included. We also consulted with a group of chefs who are current and past board members who advised on the project, and so they weighed in as well and really cared a lot about the quality of the book, representing the mission of the organization. We wanted to be using ingredients that we considered sustainable at this time. I mean, things are changing every week.
So a lot to keep up with.
Yeah.
Well, I know I was definitely excited to see some of the chefs I've worked with, Michael Anthony and Matt Weingarten and Peter Hoffman included in the book. Maybe, you could take a moment to take us through some of your favorite parts of the book and some recipes that you might want to let our listeners know are kind of more. No, I don't want to say. I don't want to put you on the spot and say more delicious, but some that you've landed on kind of organically in your perusal of the cookbook and your time in the kitchen.
Great. Well, first of all, the book is beautiful. I mean, the photography is just stunning, and that's one feature of the book. And photographer, actually, don't even know how to pronounce their last names, Gentle and Hires. I may be pronouncing that wrong.
Get the book, guys.
You'll figure it out. You'll see it. So the photography is amazing. I am opening the book at this point and looking in the plants and fruits chapter on reading the labels. And it just breaks down all of the terms, organic, biodynamic, what's actually a USDA-approved label or term, and what's really has no legal definition at all. So that's incredibly valuable to home cooks. One thing I wanted to share that doesn't get enough attention is most of the chefs in our network are James Beard Award-winning chefs and really well-known at the top of their field. But we also have members from food service or even food kitchens. And Allison Costello submitted one of the best recipes in the book. I mean, best. There's no best, but one of the most delicious.
You can have an opinion.
And it's a pumpkin curry recipe using pumpkin tips, which are the green tips of the pumpkin.
Oh, I had no idea those were edible.
I didn't either. And so, You know, when you have a pile of pumpkins, little pumpkins from the farmer's market, and you don't know what, you know, you don't have to throw away the tips of the pumpkin. It actually can make a delicious recipe. So that's really interesting. Mary Sue Milliken from Border Grill in California submitted a beet greens and legs pie, which I loved. And it's using the, you know, the stalks of the broccoli that a lot of us throw away. So that's, you know, that's an example of using everything and not throwing it away. Delicious.
Yeah, definitely a skill that I feel like chefs really need to develop, where you're like finding an outlet for everything in the kitchen, keeping those food costs down. It's like a really different perspective than maybe at home, where you get intimidated by the parts you're less familiar with and just, oh, well, I'll just pitch it, or I'll put it back in the crisper until it's gone bad. And
exactly.
Then I feel less bad about throwing it away.
Exactly. I aspire to use everything and never throw it away, but sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. One of my favorite recipes that I've now cooked about 5 times is Steve Johnson's smoke roasted whole chicken with Moroccan spices. I'm sure most of your listeners, or many of your listeners, work with whole roasted chickens, but most home cooks are intimidated by using a whole chicken. And if you go to the farmer's market and you're looking for a pastured bird, you're going to get it whole. You're not going to get it cut up in legs or thighs. But what's delicious about this recipe is there's about 15 different spices in the rub, and it just, you know, it's just delicious. And the great part is with the rub, there's extra so that you have it in your cupboard for the next time you're going to make it. So it's less work than the second time.
Nice. And so when I think smoked or smoking something, you know, in particular for a home cook, I'm like, oh man, do I need some kind of special equipment or smoker? Is that the case with this recipe? Or?
No. I inherited these pans from my brother-in-law, actually, when he got fancy Le Creuset pans. And the pan I have is actually a little Calphalon knockoff that can go in the oven. And it just is the right size for the bird. And I just put it in. You can use anything. I mean, that's what I use.
Nice.
When I cook it. Let's see what else. I'm now looking at, I already mentioned this, just how much meat is that? So if you buy a quarter cow, how many steaks do you get? What are the roasts that you get? What are the other cuts? And, you know, do I need to buy a separate freezer in order to do this? So all of that's there, really useful.
I love the kind of whimsy throughout the book too. I'm like looking at in the poultry section, and there's put an egg on it, reminiscent of the Portlandia. Put a bird on it. Basically, it's taking you through a couple different chefs' approach to using an egg in unexpected ways. It's serious in these sidebars too. I mean, you guys touch on the raw milk debate.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like no stone was kind of left unturned.
Absolutely. And it really wasn't. I mean, we combed through everything that we thought would be relevant and important. And I actually keep this book on my desk at work. I use it as a reference to when I'm looking up information myself. It's really great. We've got pork shoulder and hominy stew. I haven't made that one yet, but you'll see throughout this book sort of the cheaper cuts of meat, or the cuts of meat that aren't as tender, that require braising or long cooking. And Robert Stelling is a chef in Charleston it's actually where we're going to have our next national summit. So we're excited to go there.
To head on down Hominy Grill. Hominy
exactly.
Recipe, how apropos.
Exactly. Another section on breaking down the labels around meat. We worked with an organization called Animal Welfare Approved that's done a lot of research on the humane practices and environmental practices, and what can you trust, and what has, again, USDA approval, and what's just a name and has no bearing in. There's no law behind it, so it could be anything.
Sure, I think that's so important. It's so confusing for consumers to kind of break through kind of those language barriers. And I think one of, marketers really got it down. They know what we like to see, you know, pictures of cows roaming through fields and pastoral scenes. And then they put the word like natural across it. And we're like, natural, yes.
Exactly.
I like that. That sounds good. What about sweets? You guys get into any of the sweet stuff?
We do. Actually, every chapter has some sweet stuff, but I'm now looking at the dairy section. We have a cocoa panna cotta with blackberries, cherries, and cocoa clove cookies. And this is from Derek Wagner from Providence, Rhode Island, Nick's on Broadway. We have, I'm not looking at this now, but I'm remembering the beautiful picture, a hazelnut tart from Piper Davis in Portland, Oregon. That looks stunning. I can't wait to make that.
Nice.
It's dramatic.
I think, well, so I definitely recommend folks checking out the book. You can find it wherever fine books are sold. The recipe lineup definitely reads like a who's who of American chefs. So I'm curious, Melissa, while we have you here in the studio, if folks want to get involved with Chefs Collaborative, if they want to find out kind of like what's next, what's on the horizon for the organization, what should they be looking forward to, signing up for? Give us the lowdown.
Well, we're going to be having some trash fish dinners around the country. The next one's in Chicago. We expect to have one in Long Island. We're working on that. Our summit's coming up in November, November 3rd through 5th in Charleston, South Carolina. So, you know, you can follow us on Twitter. Chefs Collab is our Twitter handle, or sign up for our email list online at chefscollaborative.org.
Awesome. Great. And I highly recommend it. I've been on the email list for a long time. Tons of great information. Also a great kind of insight to food communities across the country. I think one of the benefits of being able to take a look from a national purview is you get a real sense, especially for us here in New York, of what's going on in different parts of the country. So thank you so much for all your great work and for coming to talk with us a little bit about the book.
Well, thanks for having me.
This has been another special recording from the Heritage Radio Network. This, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, is available for free on our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. You can also get everything via iTunes as a download. Find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. If you like what you hear and want to support us, which we hope you do and will, definitely click that donate tab. Become a member today. Thanks so much for listening and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.